This is 90.7 FM WGXE Agra, Hudson Catskill, the station that everyone loves.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned into All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
WGXE underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXE is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Melissa Alfdermar and Tony Stone of Hudson, New York. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXE newsroom, this is the WGXE Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXE.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Amanda Parcells is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Hudson Common Council approved the city's 2020 budget in a unanimous vote November 18. The spending plan calls for $11.9 million in spending, a 2.28% increase over last year. Mayor Rick Rector said next year's budget falls under the maximum tax cap increase allowed by the state at 3.8%. City officials said the city continues to draw from its fund balance, but those funds are not being replenished at the same rate they are being encumbered. The budget, as approved, is dependent on revenue increases in several areas, including the lodging tax, which is expected to raise 21.4% more in 2020, and sales tax is projected to increase by 11.8%. You can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Rick Garland reports in the Times Union that every 4 years the New York State Energy Research and Development Agency is required to release a report on state energy policy. The last one was issued in 2015. But NERSDA says the report won't be ready until next year. Instead of saying the report is late, officials are tying it into another report, the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. Quote, so as not to duplicate work, the Climate Action Council's broader examination and analysis of emissions-producing activities across the entire economy will then inform the more narrowly focused state energy plan, which only looks at the energy sector, unquote, said NERSDA spokesperson Kate Muller. Read more about the story in the Times Union.
Chris McKenna is reporting for The Fray. Governor Andrew Cuomo has signed a bill that requires all political ads and mailings identify who paid for them so opponents can no longer hurl anonymous attacks at candidates and elected officials. The ads and materials must now include a, and I quote, paid for by, end quote, message, just as federal campaigns materials are required to do. Assemblymember Ken Zabrowski, a Rockland County Democrat, sponsored the bill in the Assembly, where it had passed 4 years in a row. The Senate had never taken it up while the chamber was in Republican control. It passed in a 61-1 vote in June with Democrats in the majority and Senator James Scopus as a new sponsor. You can read the full story at The Fray.
Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that New York is taking its lawsuit challenging the federal government's $10,000 cap on state and local tax deductions to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, filing an appeal with Connecticut, Maryland, and New Jersey. On September 30th, a U.S. District Court judge dismissed the case New York and three other states filed challenging the constitutionality of the 2017 federal tax reform plan that effectively raised taxes on many New Yorkers. Quote, the Trump administration's SALT policy is retribution politics, plain and simple, unquote, Cuomo said in a statement. Governor Andrew Cuomo said in a statement. New York is already the nation's leader in sending more tax dollars to Washington than we get back every year, and we will not allow this administration to pick the pockets of hardworking New Yorkers to fund tax cuts for corporations and send even more money to red states. We will continue to fight this unconstitutional assault until it is repealed once and for all, unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
Michael Williams is reporting for the Times Union. Cosmic Cinemas, the fledgling cinema eatery in Greenport, shut its doors last week. As of Friday, November 22nd, the Fairview Avenue Theater was closed. Its lights were off and the signs taped on the door and the windows said, and I quote, "There will be no showing today. We apologize for the inconvenience," end quote. The theater is expected to reopen, however, under the same management that took over the historic Madison Avenue Theater in Albany. Chris Kessling, the cinema's general manager, said, and I quote, "We're shooting to get it back open in December," end quote. The South Carolina-based Cosmic Cinemas opened the theater last November after months of renovation. Cosmic had branded itself as a haven for cinephiles who wanted to watch movies without distractions, promising to ban cell phone use, talking, and toddlers, and where moviegoers could order a meal during a screening. And you can read the full story in the Times Union.
Mid-Hudson News reports that at a November 21st arraignment, 15 people were cited for trespassing and four were charged with criminal trespass for a protest at the Cricket Valley Energy Center on November 16th. The Dutchess County District Attorney's Office offered the trespassers 50 hours of community service at a Dutchess County nonprofit in exchange for guilty pleas. The four defendants that climbed the 270-foot smokestack at the almost-finished fracked gas plant would receive a 30-day jail sentence in the Dutchess County Jail and 1 year probation if they pleaded guilty. Instead, the protesters entered not guilty pleas. Quote, "I don't want to go to jail for 30 days, but that was a risk worth taking to shut down the plant for the day and bring awareness to the harm this plant will cause to our communities and the climate," unquote, said Creek Iverson, an Ulster County farmer charged with criminal trespass. Quote, "We shouldn't have had to be up on that smokestack, though. If Governor Cuomo is a real climate leader who cares about protecting the health and safety of New Yorkers, he'll shut down the plant for good," unquote. The protesters have also been given restraining orders to keep them from within 1,000 feet of the plant, which includes New York Route 22 and public transportation on the MTA Harlem train line. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News.
MidHudsonNews.com is reporting Ulster County Executive Patrick Ryan is calling on county lawmakers to approve his 2020 county budget as proposed. Ryan said in a statement released by his office that his comments were made in response to a series of proposals made by a group of legislators seeking to, and I quote, "strip critical funding and services meant to protect the environment, support economic development efforts, and promote diversity in the county workforce," end quote. The county executive said his proposed spending plan was shaped by public input received at town hall meetings held countywide. Ryan said he learned from those sessions that residents, and I quote, "want us to protect our environment, they want smart and proven economic development strategies, and they want a workforce that reflects the diversity of the community they are tasked to serve." And you can read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Kayla Harris reports in the Times Union that the anti-impeachment tour of New York's Republican committee stopped at Democrat Paul Tonko's Albany office November 25th. Quote, Paul Tonko was one of the earliest and loudest voices calling for the impeachment of our president, and we see absolutely no impeachable offenses in the inquiry that has gone on, unquote. GOP leader Nick Langworth, he said. Quote, they have wasted countless hours of taxpayers' time, treasure, and opportunity that they could be focusing on strengthening our economy, creating jobs, getting government out of the way for people, and helping us in the capital region create jobs, unquote. Tonko says the House has passed 275 bills this year that Republicans have ignored in the Senate. Quote, as written in our Constitution, impeachment is a remedy only to be used when misconduct by those in power is so severe that it shakes the very foundations of our democratic republic, unquote, Tonko said. Quote, regrettably, President Trump's behavior has met this standard, unquote. The president has admitted to withholding congressionally approved military aid to Ukraine until they announced an investigation into a political rival. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Casey Seeler is reporting for the Times Union. Albany County Sheriff Craig Apple's office said November 25th, a 17-year-old student at Ravenna Coyman Selkirk High School is facing multiple felony charges after he secretly filmed himself having sex with a 16-year-old female student in the boys' locker room. A school resource officer was alerted to the recording by a staff member after the student posted the video on social media. The young man allegedly made the recording and distributed it without the young woman's consent. The male student was taken into custody and charged with one count of promoting a sexual performance by a child and unlawful surveillance in the second degree, both felonies. He was also charged with one count of endangering the welfare of a child, a misdemeanor. He is scheduled to appear in Albany County Family Court November 26. It has been a rough year for the Ravenna Coyman Selkirk School District. Last month, someone scrawled a hateful message with SWAT stickers and references to Hitler on a bathroom wall at the high school the day after a number of bullets were found in a second grade classroom. And you can read that full story in the Times Union.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, rain is likely mainly after 4 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 50 degrees. Showers are likely Wednesday night. It will be mostly cloudy with a low of around 40 degrees. And on Thanksgiving Day, partly sunny with a high near 46 degrees. And Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 27. And that's your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM. Radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Thursday, November 28th, we are wishing you a happy Thanksgiving from all of us at WGXC and Wave Farm. On Friday, November 29th, the Dylan Perillo Orchestra from Albany, New York, performs popular American music from 1890 to 1950, taking a particular liking to the songbook of the 1920s, at Dewey Hall in Sheffield, Massachusetts, starting at 7:30 p.m. The tale of the wooden puppet who dreams of becoming a real boy gets a twist by the pantaloons in Pinocchio All Strung Out at the Ghent Playhouse on Town Hall Road at 8 p.m. On Saturday, November 30th, Join choral conductor Frank Nemhauser, accompanied by the Berkshire Bach Players and a seasoned instrumental ensemble of professional musicians for the annual Messiah Sing, the Society's gift to the community and herald the beginning of the holiday season, at the First Congregational Church on Main Street in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, starting at 4 p.m. Saxophonist Robin Lacey with Dan Sheehan on piano perform works by Bach, Baza, Von Neur, Schumann, and Schulhoff at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill starting at 7:30 p.m. The tale of the wooden puppet who dreams of becoming a real boy gets a twist by the pantaloons in Pinocchio All Strung Out at the Ghent Playhouse on Town Hall Road at 8 p.m. On Sunday, November 24th, The Tale of the Wooden Puppet Who Dreams of Becoming a Real Boy gets a twist by the pantaloons in Pinocchio All Strung Out at the Ghent Playhouse on Town Hall Road at 8 p.m. That's it for this week's WGXC Community Calendar. You can add your own event and hear it right here on the radio by visiting wgxc.org/calendar.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one.
Yeah! Yes, we are off the air. 90.7 FM. WGXC, let me do the first, very first station ID. You are tuned to WGXC 90.7, servicing Accra, Catskill, and Hudson, Columbia, and Greene County. Woo! Woo! Thank you, Matt, for the show.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bill Mancini and Bernadette Powis of Kinderhook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM, a listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Melina, and I'm a student of M.C. Smith Intermediate School, I think it is. I'm also from Hudson.
We're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate,
bookish things. All that good stuff. So we're going to talk about some books today.
Yay.
But it's also Thanksgiving if you're tuning in on Thursday.
Yay. Yeah.
If it's Which I'm sure everybody is listening to WGXC while they eat their Thanksgiving feast. Because everyone's so thankful for WGXC. Mm-hmm. So what better way to celebrate being thankful than listening to your favorite community radio station?
Yay.
Yay. So we wanted to talk a little bit about what we're thankful for. So what are you thankful for, Amelia?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm going to be having Thanksgiving at my house this year. So I don't have to travel. Yes.
That's a nice
thing. It's going to be a very small thing, just with me, my parents, and my grandfather.
And your cat.
And my cat. We got her...
shout out to Patches.
We got her a... I think we have like turkey flavored treats for her for that day.
Aw, that's sweet.
And my mom's going to make stuffing, and I love stuffing. After years of eating it over and over, I finally learned to love stuffing. I always wanted to like it, but I never liked it until a couple years ago. So I've accomplished my goal.
What are you thankful for, Lena?
I'm thankful for my friends and my family, and obviously my mother, because she gave birth to me.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Thanks, Mom.
Thank you. Shout out to Georgina Macias.
Here are people actually talking about their families and friends, and I'm sitting here like, yep. Man, stuffing.
We're all thankful for Thanksgiving feasts, and I'm sure we're all thankful for our families.
Yeah.
I know Amelia's very thankful for her fabulous family. Mm-hmm. I am also thankful for my family. They're great. I'm going to spend Thanksgiving with some of my aunts and uncles and cousins this year because my parents are away and my husband will be away.
Awesome.
But I will not be away. I'll be with other family.
I guess.
So it'll be fun to see them because I don't get to see them.
The mice will play.
You calling me a mouse?
No. Kinda.
That's okay. No. Mice are cute.
Mice are cute.
And wise.
Yeah, so that means you're wise and you're cute. So there. Mm-hmm. Compliment.
Thank you. I'm thankful for Lena calling me a mouse. But yeah, I'm thankful for my family and for my community. And I'm thankful for my awesome job at the Hudson Area Library. And speaking of libraries, I'm very thankful for the Mid-Hudson Library System, which gets me all the books I could ever dream of.
Wait, what is it exactly do again?
The Mid-Hudson Library System is the system that we're a part of, our library. So we're one of 66 libraries in the Mid-Hudson Library System. And we're all separate entities, but we work together to help bring resources to people and make things possible for our communities. So if you ever want to borrow a book, if we don't have it at our library, we can say, hey, other library, can you send it our way so that Lena can read it? And they'll send it. Oh. And it comes in like a day or two usually.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like The Girl at Midnight?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The one that I ordered that is really good so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would be basically broke if it wasn't for the library and the library system, because I would spend all my money on books.
Okay.
Or I'd figure out how to find other joys in life, but then I would miss my books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you most thankful for in your Thanksgiving meal?
This is one of those favorite Thanksgiving food questions. And honestly, if I was having it this year, it would be biscuits. Mm. But if biscuits
a certain
aren't
kind
there,
of biscuit or
buttermilk biscuits.
My mom makes some pumpkin rolls that are really good.
My favorite biscuits are the ones at Cracker Barrel.
Maybe you can
awful.
Get some takeout.
My favorite biscuits are the ones in Red Lobster.
I've never been to Red Lobster, and I need to go there because they have those cheddar biscuits, and my friend talks about them all the time, and they're supposed to be really good.
Yeah.
I need to try them.
So what's your favorite Thanksgiving dish, Lena?
Everything at the table, but I'd have to say that the ham is the best because if you slice up a ham like a bacon strip, boom, you have bacon.
On my dad's family, if we were to have Thanksgiving at my Grandma Maria's apartment, we would have ham instead of turkey. That's the thing we do. And there is no table. We just stand around with paper plates and talk and get food and eat ham. And it's a good time.
My favorite is cranberry sauce, but I like my mom's cranberry sauce in particular. And I'm going to make some this year, even though not for Thanksgiving, but for afterwards. Because somebody else is making the cranberry sauce. But I don't think I can go a year without having my mom's cranberry sauce recipe.
I'm also really fond of pumpkin pie.
I've actually never had pie before.
Any kind?
You've never had pie?
No, I don't think so.
No?
Well, there's none that I've actually really liked because I tried an apple pie before and oof, it did not taste work for you. Good.
Mm-hmm. I used to love apple pie and then one day it made me sick and I can't eat it ever since then. I just have flashbacks to that day.
I'm making a pie for Thanksgiving. It's chocolate peanut butter pie.
Nice.
And then it has pretzels dipped in chocolate on top.
Oh, bring us some.
And it's so good. And it's vegan. Yay.
Ooh.
It's really easy to make too, which is a bonus.
Cool.
So moving more into bookland, is there a book or a book series that you're most thankful for?
Oh my gosh. I don't know if I can be thankful for this because the book I just finished made me cry.
Oh.
But I am thankful for Wings of Fire. And the Young Elites for just being there for me to love, even though I'm probably never going to get more of it. They're there for me to love.
Yeah.
But yeah, Wings of Fire and the upcoming books and comics.
Yeah. For Wings of Fire?
For Wings of Fire.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I hope they continue the comics into the next and third series, because if they continue into the third series, I have another really colorful, really bright and just colorful dragon book to look forward to, because the new species that they introduced are also really colorful.
Nice.
And I would love to see that in comic form as well.
Can you describe it?
Oh my gosh. So, wait, the series as a whole, or the comics? Or the dragons?
Like, the new species.
Oh, the new species. So, in the first book, I think there were 7 species, and the one that was my favorite visually in the newest comic were called Rain Wings, which were chameleon-like and could change the color of their scales. So they could pretty much be any color they wanted. So in one book where you had mostly browns, or another book where you had mostly blues, because that was the color that species came in, the Rain Wings could be, like, anything. There were blues and yellows and pinks. There's one really pink one that I love. And they could change it up, too. And also, it's set in a jungle with a lot of bright plants and animals. So it's just a very, very colorful thing. The new ones can't change their scales, but they're all based off of different butterflies.
Oh, that's
and can
nice.
Be just as colorful. Like, the main character is named Blue, and he is Blue. His sister's name is Luna, and she looks like a Luna moth, one of those bright green ones. Their parents are named, like, Silver Spot, and I think another one. So they're the Silver Spot butterflies. Another character who I think is called Admiral, which is also a blue one, but they're very colorful and also very bright, and I love it so much. And it's just they're very pretty, and they also have like butterfly like wings too.
Cool.
So they look very cool. So Yay. It's just as colorful, but not as colorful as the Rain Wings, because the Rain Wings can be like any color. But yeah, if they were to continue with the comics that far into the future, I would really appreciate that, seeing that in, like, visuals.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool.
The setting of that one is also really unique, too, because they all live in hives.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's a very fantastical series.
Yeah.
It's fantastical.
I think it would be fun in graphic novels, too.
Yeah, it is.
So what about you, Lena? Do you have a book or series or author that you're most thankful for?
Okay, so That one author who made the Girl at Midnight series, because it's getting really good, Raina Telgemeier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's great. She does some great graphic novels. Do you have a favorite of hers?
Wait, which one?
Raina Telgemeier?
I'd have to say the Sisters one, because I remember I would get it, like, if I didn't know what to get, I'd always get Sisters, or if the book that I wanted wasn't there, and usually I would just like go on the computers or something when I'm bored, I would just get that book, because I just really like how interesting it is.
I don't know how to answer my own question. I think I'm really thankful for how diverse and eclectic and beautiful the picture book industry is right now. There's so many amazing picture books coming out, and I get a lot of joy from reading those. And then in terms of authors or books, it's hard to say. I think some of the classics that I always go back to, and maybe they're not my favorite, but I still appreciate them. I really appreciate the quirkiness of Shel Silverstein and how I feel like when I was a kid, he was very popular, and I feel like he's still very popular with kids. Like he's sort of timeless in his weirdness. And I also have a audio recording of one, of, I think of A Light in the Attic, in that book collection of poems.
Ooh.
And his reading of those poems is genius. It's so good. Everybody that likes Shel Silverstein should listen to that. I also love Arnold Lobel, who wrote Frog and Toad, that series.
Oh, I remember those books. I loved those books.
And I have a big place in my heart for Cat Wings, because they're cats with wings, and that's amazing.
Oh, you've talked about Cat Wings before.
And that's one that I didn't read as a kid. I found that as an adult and was like, why did people hide this from me? Why didn't no one make me read this?
I actually recently ran into a friend of mine who first got me into Wings of Fire, and I'm sitting here like on the 13th book in the series, which is the latest one that came out, and she's looking at me and she's like, is that Wings of Fire? You're still reading that? And I just looked her dead in the eye. I'm like, yes.
Like, forever.
I am. Leave me alone. The latest book in that series was so good, and it's probably one of like the few I could probably summarize without spoiling everything up to that point. But it's so cute. It's so cute. I love them. I love the characters. Just love it.
When you like started talking about Cat Wings, that reminded me of a book that a girl was reading in class last year called Purrmaids. It's like cats as mermaids.
Oh, Purrmaids. That's so cute. I love cats.
It's funny, too, though, because I feel like most cats, not all cats, but the majority of cats do not like getting wet. So I'm just picturing these really miserable cats.
Aww.
Like, on the cover, like, one was, like, with a tiara, and it's, like, so happy, like, oh, adopt me, pet me, pet me. Come on, I want you to give me tummy rubs.
They're catfish. They're catfish. They're catfish. Oh, I'm gonna be repeating that to myself like at midnight tonight. Just like, catfish. Oh my god, they're catfish.
That's like, there was a book series called Scorpio Races by Maggie Stiefvater that I really loved. And in the book, there's horses from the sea, and I often refer to them as seahorses, but they're not seahorses like the little, you know, cute little seahorses. They're like wild beasts of horses.
Oh my god.
That come from the sea. But it seems funny calling them seahorses because they don't seem very, they don't seem that wild or scary or dangerous.
I thought seahorses just like stood there in like the ocean and it's like, okay, what to do with my life now? I was just born.
Where do you find seahorses like in the wild? That's a thought that's never occurred to me because I've only ever seen them in aquariums.
Yeah, me too.
And they're so tiny. I'm like, how do you exist outside of here?
Have you ever seen video of them having babies?
It's terrifying.
They're tiny and they just come like
it's
shooting
so
out.
It's so scary.
Yeah.
Seahorses are so small. How do they live? What do they do? This is going to bother me. This is going to bother me like the fact that I've never seen a living raccoon. That bothers me a lot. Like, I've never seen a raccoon alive.
Yeah, they're not as common here as some places.
I always see them like in shows or like in YouTube videos, like when JN Animations was like, I always wanted a pet raccoon, but someday I will get it. Just kidding. They tear up your couches and walls. And I'm like, and I just keep on watching it because the raccoon just looks so cute.
So sort of like that. I've never seen them alive except for like in videos and stuff. Like, are they real? Are raccoons real? I don't think
they're real. I've seen them in real life.
I think I actually texted a friend one day with no context and just asked them, hey, are raccoons real? I don't think they are. I'm starting to think they aren't.
It's a myth.
I've never seen a living raccoon.
It's like Sasquatch.
Yeah.
Like,
watch me walk out of this building and like come face to face with a raccoon. I've seen a living skunk, unfortunately.
They're cute.
I don't even know what happened to that one. Like, I was just chilling and I'm like, oh my gosh, look at that cat. That's not a cat. I have to get past that thing.
Don't pet it.
What do I do? And I got past it, but like, it freaked me out for several reasons. For one thing, I don't
think it was healthy because they're nocturnal, and this thing was out in like at like noon, and I'm just like, what are you doing there, buddy? Please don't attack me.
Okay.
It was such like a punch in the gut to realize what I was looking at. I was like, oh no, what do I do?
Oof. I'm glad you survived.
Yes, I survived.
And they are real, the raccoons, as well as the skunks.
Yeah. I know skunks are real. I just don't know if raccoons are yet.
Sometimes I question myself, are seahorses real? Because like I've seen pictures of them. I've seen them like in fake aquarium wallpapers, but I'm like, are they even real?
Well, I've seen seahorses alive, like in aquarium tanks.
Oh.
I'll tell you what, I have less of a problem believing that giant squids are real than raccoons, because like I've seen live, well, I haven't seen one, but I've, what am I saying? I've never seen a living, I don't think anyone has ever seen a living giant squid. They only ever wash up on the beach, and that's how they know they exist. Because they live so deep in the ocean and they're so hard to observe that they're just chilling down there.
Yeah.
With pretty much one predator, which is like the giant sperm whale. That's the only thing that eats giant squids.
Oh, no.
That is terrifying.
I wonder how many of them there are.
I don't know. I mean, they're considered like least concern on the endangered species list. But half of me thinks that how would you know otherwise? You have no idea where they are. They're just chilling down there. Doing what they do with their giant eye, and it's so scary.
Oh. Like, I question myself, are giant squids even a thing? Because, like, it could literally be just a jellyfish painting itself, like, somehow orange.
It's not even, like, the giant squid isn't even the biggest squid in the world. A colossal squid is the biggest squid in the world.
Yeah.
I don't like those either, because they're just giant squids, but bigger.
I like them, but I don't want to run into them in the ocean.
I wouldn't know.
But anyways.
Oh, no, I don't want this to end. I just don't want this to end because this is actually really interesting.
We've been talking about fish for such a long time.
Yeah.
What is this show about again?
Yeah. I read a book about fish.
Remember Rainbow Fish? Yo, I loved that book when I was little.
I loved that book when I was little. I remember I would be like, oh, I'm a hardcore rainbow fish fan because, like, some people would be like, I love the seahorse. And I'm like, there's no seahorse in the story. And they'd just be like, I love this. And I'm like, dude, did you literally just, like, watch Baby Shark and be like, okay, I'm going to add a seahorse?
You know what? I was a hardcore The Hungry Caterpillar fan. Oh. When I was really little, my parents would read to me, I love The Hungry Caterpillar, and like I wanted to eat all the food he ate because I was like, man, that looks good. Oh. I want some plums.
I was always like, oh my god.
The Hungry Caterpillar is literally the reason why I sought out and tried a plum for the first time when I was 13, I think. And I was like, man, look at this. This is the stuff that caterpillar ate. It must be good. And it was. It was delicious.
That just like makes me think of what I did whenever I watch something too much, like Inuyasha or some anime or something. They would be like, come on Naruto, or come on Inuyasha, and they never did that to me when I was that age, but like I would just watch it all the time.
Oh, speaking of anime and stuff, I got into like a really intense discussion with a girl in the manga section of Barnes & Noble, and it was awesome. I don't know why, but it was great. I didn't even have to like initiate it. She just walked up and started talking to me about the different stuff on the shelves, and I'm like, cool.
That's nice.
Cool.
It was a customer. It wasn't.
It was a customer. It was just some customer, and I was like, awesome, awesome. And then she's like, you should read Wolf Children or Your Lie in April sometime. And I'm like, you know what? I would, but I don't feel like crying today.
Oof.
Because I know that those two things are sad, and I've already cried over The Book Thief, so I'm going to have to spend quite a bit before I cry over anything else.
Oh, no.
The Book Thief was so sad, and now I finally know where the quote, I'm haunted by humans, comes from. I knew that that was a quote from something, but I never knew it was from that book. Mm. So when that final quote hit me in the end, I was like, wait a minute. Then we spent, like, all of English just gushing over this book. And the funny thing is, during our class, we had this assignment which was, like, character recipes, which is this thing where you had to, like, put character traits as ingredients. And me and my friend went above and beyond and made a Book Thief Cafe. Whoa. With a food themed after each thing. And Death, who's the narrator of The Book Thief, is Death.
Oh.
In it, he says something like, my favorite color is dark chocolate.
So we made, my friend made chocolate pudding and brought it in. And we have this running joke that Tom Hiddleston would be great at playing death in this book. And this, all of these inside jokes just culminated into this instant where we're all sitting here eating chocolate pudding with a picture of Tom Hiddleston on the Promethean board. And this girl walks in and looks at us and goes, "Miss Neer, is this a class?" Miss Neer's like, "Yes," as we sit eating chocolate pudding and looking at a giant picture of Tom Hiddleston on the board. And we're just like, "Yes, this is a class. Get out. This is our time." There's six of us and Miss Neer.
Get your own pudding.
There's just six of us and our teacher, and we're very territorial. In fact, next year they're planning on evening out the classes, and the six of us are just going to sit right in the front. We're going to assert our dominance. Like, we were here first.
Oh, no.
We are her favorite.
I'm glad you liked the book, even though it made you sad.
It did make me cry. I loved everyone in that book. Mm-hmm. How can I love everyone in that book? We've decided that Marcus Zizek must have sold his soul to something to write that book. Because it is so good. Book. It is so good.
You can look forward to reading that someday, Lena. Oof. And crying your eyes out.
Yeah, but if she doesn't want to cry soon, then maybe you should save Your Lie in April for last.
I know how it ends.
Oh, okay.
And I'd still probably cry.
I remember I'd cry, but now I'm like, why did I cry over this?
I mean, I saw the ending coming. I was like, yeah.
What's the series called?
Your Lie in April. It's a manga and anime. Yes.
Yeah.
In April?
Yeah. Yes. It is about this piano player who's lost his, like, will to perform, and he meets this violin player, and she's like, "You should." And then they do, and they have this cute, like, romance, and then it ends, and then I cry.
Yeah.
And that is how it goes.
Yeah.
Even though I saw the ending coming, I still cried.
I didn't see it. I'm like, wait, what? How does this happen? I don't get it. And I kind of get it, but still don't get it.
Yeah. Do you both read much manga?
I have every book of Black Butler, which is the shirt I'm wearing right now, up until the last few. I can't find the one between 20 and 22. I've seen the beginning of 22, and a theory like I thought about was correct, that a lot of people thought was correct, is correct. But I can't read 22 yet and see my theory come to fruition, because 21 is nowhere in the world, apparently. I can't find it.
Wow.
But, yeah, that was my first, like, real deal, like, Japanese comic manga experience was Black Butler and the anime of Black Butler. And then I got these other things. I started getting into Tokyo Ghoul, which I'm not as into now because the quality dropped. I got into this thing called Magical Girl Apocalypse, which is not appropriate for anyone in the world, and I don't know why I read it, because it was frightening and awful. Oh. And I think I, like, pawned off all those books to a friend, because I was like, I don't want these in my house anymore. Please take them.
It's good to have friends willing to take that on.
I have this other one that's supposed to be really good. And then I have the Junji Ito comics, which are horror, and are really, really good horror, because his illustrations are just so unnerving. Mm. And also, there's just the shock of turning a page, like, compared to, like, in a movie you can rewind, you can look, but when you turn a page and the way he draws something, you really have to look at it for a bit before you realize what you're looking at, and what you're looking at is almost always horrifying. So I have two of those, and I've only read one so far. I have Doubt, which was a pretty good, almost Saw-like horror manga as well. And I think I had this thing called Happy Marriage for a little while, because when you're reading Tokyo Ghoul and Magical Girl Apocalypse and Junji Ito, sometimes you just need a stupid romance manga with no logic to just reinvigorate yourself, to just read something that doesn't require any thinking or any, like, deep existential crises. And you gotta just read about this lady who's decided to marry her boss, and it's cute. And even though it wouldn't be cute in real life, it's cute in this manga, and I don't want to think about it. So let me read my cheesy Beauty and the Beast-esque romance, and let me live. I don't have those anymore either. Where did they go? I only read two of them, and I don't know where they went. But yes, that's what I read. I know I have more somewhere that I just haven't bothered to read. I think I had one by this author who is well known for, like, writing really nice, like, LGBT romances, which are much more common in Japanese animation shows than it is in, like, American stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what that one was called or where it went either. I need to go home and sort through these things.
Well, we're actually out of time for today.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. So you
I just rambled for a very long time. You asked me about manga, and I was like, here's my in.
But I'm saying that's good timing, because now you can go home and sort through all your books if you want.
Yeah.
But we hope everyone out there listening has a great Thanksgiving. Yay. Or had it if you're listening after the fact. We're thankful for you, our listeners.
Yeah.
And we're thankful for all the books that we hope you get to read this coming week. We hope they are wonderful, whether they make you cry or make you smile or somewhere in between or horrify you. So many options.
Yeah. Make you brought me back to a place that I never wanted to remember with some of these things.
You're welcome. But have a great week. Happy reading.
Bye.
Bye.
This is Nature Note with Angela Gibbons of Earthwalk Vermont.
Today I'm feeling thankful for the wild turkey. Wild turkeys have some amazing adaptations that help them survive our long cold winters, despite their bare legs and bald heads. Of course, it helps that each turkey has 5,000 to 6,000 feathers to stay warm. Additionally, their legs and feet are covered with specialized scales that minimize heat loss. Turkeys can also control temperatures of their legs separately from their bodies. However, turkeys having bald heads remains a bit of a mystery. Right now, turkeys are preparing for the long winter ahead by building up an extra layer of fat. Recently, I have been noticing large flocks of turkeys, up to 30 or more, gathered in cornfields. They are taking advantage of the corn that farmers leave behind. Other favorite foods in the fall are acorns, beech nuts, hickory nuts, and grasses. Wild turkeys are social birds and prefer to live and travel together in flocks. A flock can help protect them from predators such as fishers, bobcats, coyotes, foxes, and owls. And if turkeys need to escape danger, surprisingly, these large birds can run at speeds of up to 25 miles per hour. Turkeys generally prefer traveling by foot, though they can take flight over short distances. They need their wings to get out of trouble and to fly up into trees to roost each night. Next time you see a turkey or a flock of turkeys, check out what the birds are doing to survive winter and give thanks for these extraordinary birds.
Nature Note comes to you weekly from earthwalkvermont.org and Goddard College Community Radio.
Babies, and now it's time to go to our live remote man on the scene at the Pinedale Shopping Mall for the big WKRP turkey giveaway. So take it away, Les Nessman.
This is Les Nessman, your man on the scene here at the Pinedale Shopping Center, where the excitement is mounting. We're here to witness the big WKRP Turkey Thanksgiving giveaway.
Hey, you got permission to be out here?
Hundreds of people who have gathered to witness what has been described as perhaps the greatest turkey event in Thanksgiving Day history. All we know for sure is that in a very few moments, there are going to be a lot of happy people out here. What a sight, ladies and gentlemen, what a sight. The copter seems to be circling the parking area now. I guess it's looking for a place to land. No, something just came out of the back of the helicopter. It's a dark object. Perhaps a skydiver plummeting to the earth from only 2,000 feet into the air. Second, and a third. There's no parachutes yet.
Skydivers. I can't tell just yet what they are, but... Oh, my God, they're turkeys! Oh, Johnny, can you get this? Oh, they're crashing to the earth right in front of my eyes! One just went through the windshield of a parked car! This is terrible. The
car is running around pushing each other. Oh, my goodness! Oh, the humanity! Oh, people are running about. The turkeys are hitting the ground like sacks of wet cement.
Tragedy, has there been anything like this? I don't know how much longer I can hold my position here, Johnny. The crowd...
Les, are you there? Les isn't there. Thanks for that on-the-spot report, Les. You just tuned in. The Pinedale Shopping Mall has just been bombed with live turkeys. Film at 11.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Thursday, November 28th, 2019. I'm Eric Tegedov. Happy Thanksgiving. Rudy Giuliani was in talks to do business with Ukraine's top prosecutor earlier this year, according to reports from the New York Times and Washington Post. While he publicly sought dirt on the Bidens in collaboration with Ukraine prosecutor Yuri Lutsenko, President Trump's personal attorney Giuliani was in secret negotiations to represent Lutsenko for at least $200,000. Giuliani has maintained that he never had any business with Ukraine, and the deal with Lutsenko was never finalized. Trump has tried to distance himself in recent days from Giuliani's work in Ukraine, but officials like European Union Ambassador Gordon Sondland have testified that Trump directed him to speak to Giuliani on matters in Ukraine. Social isolation that leads to loneliness is increasingly being recognized as a significant public health issue for older adults. As the holidays approach, there are many ways to help older adults who run a high risk of feeling isolated. Roz Brown has more from South Dakota.
Nearly half of adult Americans say they feel alone, according to research by healthcare provider Cigna, and the holidays can exacerbate that loneliness. Kristen Fox is the director of Senior Companions of South Dakota. As the days grow shorter and temperatures plunge, especially those who live in rural areas can feel left out.
It is a hard time for a lot of people, but especially with seniors who are perhaps isolated already. So I would suggest whatever it takes to get out and about and continue being part of the community.
In addition to volunteering, experts recommend group exercise classes, book clubs, visiting libraries, museums, and places of worship as ways to avoid isolation. Fox adds that the holidays also are a good excuse to call loved ones and catch up, and to make self-care a priority.
The cold weather may be top of mind for most Americans across the country today, but effects of climate change identified on a new interactive map, from wildfires to deadly heat waves to floods, are all too real. More from Arizona.
Developed by the National Wildlife Federation, the map shows where climate change-fueled disasters have made environmental extremes dangerous, both for people and animals. Nikki Julian, Climate Program Director for the Arizona Wildlife Federation, says the map shows where man-made structures are magnifying the heat.
Here in Phoenix, we're especially creating a heat island effect, and a lot of other cities also are developing that heat island. The heat from the sun permeates the concrete and the asphalt, and it doesn't release very quickly, so it releases over time, which makes the air hotter.
According to the Unnatural Disasters map, by October of this year, there were 10 weather and climate events that each exceeded $1 billion in losses. And studies show in the U.S., some 12,000 species are at increased risk of extinction due to the effects of climate-driven disasters. Mark Richardson reporting.
This is PNS. Hunters are fanning out across Wisconsin for the 9-day firearm deer season, which got underway over the weekend. In their attempt for a successful hunt, state officials want them to keep an eye out for an invasive animal.
In their quest for food, wild pigs, also known as feral hogs, can spread diseases as well as damage crops and wildlife. They've caused serious problems in other states, mainly in the southern U.S. Liz Tanner, a wildlife biologist with the Department of Natural Resources, says while it hasn't been a big problem here, some sightings have been reported this fall.
Occasionally we do get feral pig type sighting reports, and they typically turn out to be domestic pigs that have escaped confinement. And so we're aware of some domestic pigs that may be on the landscape right now, and we're really hoping that hunters can help us eradicate those pigs.
The Wisconsin DNR considers them unprotected wild animals with no closed hunting season or harvest limit.
That was Mike Moen reporting. On the other end of the spectrum, North Carolina officials are urging the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to work harder to save endangered red wolves from extinction. More from Nadia Ramlagan.
The Albemarle Peninsula in northeastern North Carolina is now the only place in the country where red wolves can be found in the wild. And Heather Clarkson of the nonprofit group Defenders of Wildlife says the red wolf population is in dire straits.
That area of the state is one of the hardest hit from the effects of climate change. So not only are the red wolves facing, you know, these really terrible problems with vehicular mortality and gunshot mortality, but also, like, they're losing ground every single day.
In letters sent this week to Interior Secretary David Bernhardt and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Governor Roy Cooper, along with the State Department of Natural and Cultural Resources, has asked the federal agencies to immediately take action to save the existing wild red wolf population.
Research has shown that since the end of the Great Recession, rural areas in Ohio and other states haven't shared in the same economic recovery as cities. But a new report suggests rural America has unique assets that shouldn't be overlooked.
Senior economist at the Center for American Progress, Olugbenga Ajilori, says rural communities have fallen behind metro areas in terms of jobs, labor force participation, and population. But while these areas share similar challenges, he says they each have unique strengths.
There's no one-size-fits-all solution for rural America. A lot of it depends on what part of rural America that you're talking about, and then focusing on the assets within those communities. How do we take advantage of those assets to really help those communities flourish?
Ajilori explains some rural areas have natural amenities and landscapes that can be used to create or expand outdoor recreation and tourism opportunities. Increasing demand for specialty and luxury goods gives rural manufacturers a chance to adapt their practices to meet global market needs. Mary Sherman reporting.
I'm Eric Tegedoff for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org. We'll be right back.